This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutan. Welcome back to The Morning Run. Japan's economy grew at an annualized rate of 0.5% in the last 3 months through December, capping an 8th straight quarterly expansion, which is the longest stretch in nearly 30 years. But it was slower than previously expected. Now, we have to help us understand this situation. We have Mikio Kumada, global strategist at LGT Capital Partners in Hong Kong, on the line. And Brian, you speak to him.
Good morning, Mikio. Japan's growth slowed down in the last quarter. What's your view on the Japanese economy in the short run? Is the growth momentum running out of steam?
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me. Well, I think it's not really running out of steam. I mean, it is, of course, correct, as you mentioned, that if you look at the quarter-on-quarter change, it looks like it slowed down based on the first preliminary reading to 0.5% annualized. But that's, as I said, quarter-on-quarter. It's down from 1.5% or so in the previous quarter. Again, quarter on quarter. But if you look at the, so that's obviously a slower number, but if you look at the year over year change, it's about 1.5%, the most recent number, and that's still significantly above potential, which is roughly, you know, around 1% or so at maximum. So it's still above potential, which is pretty good. Furthermore, if you look at the reasons why that growth number on the quarterly basis was somehow lower than the market has expected, is that you had a surge in imports and a decline in public demand, government spending, essentially. Whereas you had a pickup in private domestic demand. So I think that while the number may look like a slowdown, momentum has continued. Now, going forward, I think it's a matter of where expectations are, and I would say that perhaps expectations are now a bit too positive, so it's becoming more difficult to beat the higher expectations, but generally growth is doing okay in Japan.
Mikio, you talked about a pickup in domestic demand. Now, does that mean that the Japanese consumers are really starting to spend now again?
Yes, I think that is the case. Also, you have, of course, very low unemployment. You have more employment coming into the people. You have several sectors in the economy where wages are rising very well. This is particularly true for skilled labor and new entrants into the qualified entrants into the economy. So overall, there's more people with jobs and with increasing pockets with rising incomes. So that all helps. In addition to expectations that, you know, this is a growth cycle that will continue, that supports it.
Now, the yen has also been strengthening, and given the weaker growth in the last quarter in Japan, do you think that the BOJ will put monetary policy normalization on the back burner?
Well, at least on the back burner, yes. I actually am among those who hope that the Bank of Japan will ease further. The reason being that, as you know, while the economy is doing generally well, inflation is still very clearly below its target. And doing nothing has only contributed to market expectations that the BOJ will follow the rest of the central banks or most of the other central banks and initiate so-called normalization. But the other central banks are just much closer to their inflation target. So I think definitely the BOJ Japan will be inclined to postpone any normalization, and I hope that they will actually signal that they are ready to ease, because that's what is needed if they want to meet the 2% target.
So, Mikio, then, what is your view on the yen's direction in the near term?
Well, the yen is, you know, depends a little bit on the policy outlook. Right now, I think the market expectations, unlike my own, are much more tilted in favor of a scenario that sees the Bank of Japan normalizing policies, i.e. beginning to withdraw stimulus more freely, or to continue to effectively withdraw stimulus, as some people are saying. And that is strengthening the yen, even though that is strengthening the yen. And there are some fundamental arguments. I mean, the yen is undervalued from a purchasing power parity perspective. So there are forces that drive the yen higher. However, I would be very cautious on the bottom line is I would be neutral on the yen because there is uncertainty with regards to what this, the Bank of Japan will actually do. I think we might get a surprise easing by the Bank of Japan, which would weaken the yen temporarily.
Got you. Neutral on the yen. Now, let's shift a little bit to a little bit more macro view. What are your thoughts on the news that the US, Japan, India and Australia could join forces to establish an alternative to China's Belt and Road Initiative? Do you think that this is something that will resonate with Japanese policymakers as a way to counterbalance China, particularly in ASEAN?
Well, I think it's from a Japanese perspective, definitely yes. It is something that appeals to policymakers. It is policy in Japan. I'm not sure whether they would be phrasing it the way you did as a rival to China. I think the view is that it's a complementary, that it's an alternative to what's on offer. I also think by what's on offer, I mean, you know, by China-led initiatives for regional economic integration. So in a way, it's adding competition in the market for trade agreements, so to speak. And I also think that at the very least in the U.S. and in India, it's appealing to this concept is appealing to policymakers. At the moment, it seems to be there seems to be also quite a high commitment in Australia. I would say that the Australian commitment maybe depend a little bit on which government is in power there. The Labor government being traditionally more concerned about maintaining good relationships to China than perhaps the conservative one. But overall, in all four countries, I think this concept has merits from a policymaker's point of view. And for third regions or third countries like the ASEAN that you mentioned, the economic consequence for that, as I said, you know, because it's competition, I think it might be a positive one because you have two options, basically, that to a certain degree you can use as leverage when you're negotiating with the other party. So both parties will be, or blocks, if you want, will be competing for influence and economic integration. So that, as they say, a little bit of competition is a good thing.
Now, Mikio, in your quarterly tactical asset allocation review in December, you adopted a defensive bias despite the rosy macro environment at the time. Now, that strategy has proven to be correct given the global sell-off in early February. Now, what's your current strategy in the short to medium term?
Yes, indeed, as our investment team decided to go a bit defensive, still overweight equities, but to raise cash because we thought that you know, valuations and prices were rising a little bit too fast, and expectations in that term to be correct. What we did very recently during the correction is we put some of the money back into the markets, into equity markets in particular. We did buy a little bit in the U.S. because there we thought the correction had gone too far. And we also bought in the emerging market space where the correction of prices was not that steep relative to the one in the U.S., but where the trends and valuations just made more sense. So we put some of that money, some of that excess reserve cash that we put aside in December back into action during the correction because that's the outlook remains the same. It's more a matter of how quickly expectations, valuations rise.
Thanks for your insights, Mikio. That was Mikio Kumada, global strategist at LGT Capital Partners in Hong Kong.
Coming up next, we have earnings, Axiata, Sime Darby, and Media Prima in our crosshairs. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.